Simon & Schuster Audio presents Whalefall, a novel by Daniel Kraus, read by Kirby Hayborn.
If this whale be a king, he is a very sulky-looking fellow. Herman Melville, Moby Dick. Truth. 3000 PSI. Highway 1 drones. Cypress trees roar. Gulls shriek in squadrons. Yet all Jay Gardner hears is his father awakening the family at 6 a.m. Weekdays, weekends, holidays, the man's blood so attuned to tidal patterns that he gets up without an alarm to begin the bedroom invasions, cowbelling his coffee cup. Sleepers, arise! Mitt Gardner's been dead a year now, but his foghorn will be startling Jay from sleep for the rest of his life. He's sure of it. Jay loves his mom, though, and his sisters. They're okay. So there's guilt for refusing their reasonable requests throughout the whole ugly saga. Mom, Nan, and Eva have therapists now and talk about closure. Jay's not sure he believes in therapy. He definitely doesn't believe in closure. People aren't doors. They're whole floor plans, entire labyrinths. And the harder you try to escape, the more lost inside them you become. Jay's 17 years deep into the maze, too late to backtrack. His car sheds rust scabs as he grovels it along the cinnamon shoulder of Highway 1. A white cloud parachutes over the road, mist from ocean waves he hears but can't see. No open parking spots. Weird. This isn't Huntington Beach. There are no fudge shops, no bikini boutiques. Only the Santa Lucia Mountains. Early August, 7:45 in the morning, Monastery Beach should be a ghost town, aside from Catholic cars tootling up the hill from Mass at the Carmelite Monastery. Jay uses the first four swear words he thinks of. He should go home, pick a different day. Crows puff and flap inside his ribcage in stern disapproval. This sets his heart lobbing, his scalp sweating. He's psyched himself up so hard for this, doom metal tunes and coffee, that the idea of quitting nauseates him. If he leaves now, that's it. He'll never come back. To people who know him, he'll forever be the shit scraped off Mitt Gardner's shoe. Over the berm are the waters where Mitt died. Closure, no. But signposts through the labyrinth? Maybe. You're doing the dive, Jay, he says. Moving forward is the only way out. He's ashamed how badly his mother misses him. His sisters are furious with him. Seems like no one in Monterey thinks he even deserves the name Gardner after how he allowed his father to suffer without him. This dive could change all of it. Unclenched, his jaw lets in the familiar tastes of salt, sand, and fear. He knows another place to park, a side route to the beach. U-turn. A great blue heron objects with a swoop as dawn light blinds. Different from dusk light, though both feel like kinds of snares. Mitt disagreed. Jay thinks back on it. He's thought of nothing but his father all morning. 2015. Steinbeck called this the Hour of the Pearl. It's dusk, the dusk of dusk, an unblurred luster. Dad's talking about John Steinbeck's Cannery Row. You can't go 2 feet in downtown Monterey without the book being bragged about on street signs and from shop windows. Like the sardine factory ruins on the row itself, Steinbeck's novel evokes a simpler, pitiless time, qualities Mitt Gardner values. To him, modern Monterey is a boil seeping tourist pus over a coastline that should have been left to the fish-stinking folk who worked it. Jay, age 10, disagrees. The row is electrifying. Music pumped from crunchy restaurant speakers. Fried food in the wind, outdoor magicians, ice cream splats on the sidewalk that Dad says look like blood, but make Jay hungry. When time stops and examines itself, he wrote, they are waiting in a hotel parking lot. Dad's current gig is scraping scum off the hotel's pier. In 5 minutes, his boss will show up and fire him. It's Dad's attitude. You can't chew out guests, Mitt, even when they toss a plastic cup into the bay. Dad's twisting Cannery Row inside huge hands. Dad's no reader. This book's the sole exception, his source of workaday psalms. He hands the book to Jay like it's religion. Jay doesn't hate Cannery Row yet, but after teachers force him to read it in 6th, 8th, and 10th grades, he will. A chunk of pages falls out and is stolen by the wind. Yellow swallows to join the black cormorants lording over the cannery ruins. Dad watches them soar.
That's all right. Every hour of the pearl, you realize you've lost pages too. More and more pages until,
he whistles,
you're all gone.
Dad plucks another page free with his right hand, the one missing half the ring finger, lets the page fly away, gone like his job. He taps the book, fat from water damage.
What happens when you die in the ocean? Bloat.
3,000 PSI. 500 feet north is the Bay School Parent Co-op Preschool, a low magenta building notched into tall green trees. It's closed, red playground plastic faded a cataract pink, no scrambling rugrats. Jay's glad, doesn't have time for jealousy. His only childhood playgrounds were kelpie piers, moss-velveted docks, boats that stank of sulfur. He steers off Highway 1 into the school lot, tires munching fallen leaves. The hell? Cars are here, too. Only 4, but that's 4 more than expected. Jay parks, glad for the mask of shade. The pickup truck to his right sports 2 blue logos, NOAA and NMFS, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and National Marine Fisheries Service. You gotta be shitting me! Jay strikes the steering wheel with open palms. Just his luck. 99 days out of 100, a diver could drop off Monastery Beach without a single witness. Today there's some kind of, what, environmental disaster? He looks left, and his skin bakes hotter. An orange-striped SUV with the words, United States Coast Guard. The fuck? Mitt Gardner hated a lot of things, people, ideas, and philosophies, but nothing needled him more than what he called the dirty CGs. Jay hates agreeing with his father on anything. Each time is an infection. But discharging his passed-down distrust of the Coast Guard would be like extracting his own spleen. Jay doesn't need a therapist to tell him he's being stupid. Someone might have drowned on Monastery last night, and the Coast Guard is picking up the pieces. Jay's misgivings come from how reliably the dirty CGs upset his father, how often he bore witness to Mitt's fury. He recalls sniffling tears while Mitt harassed a dirty CG for ticketing some petty violation.
You're going to tell me what's right for the ocean, you pencil pusher? I was born on the water.
Not even true, according to Granny Gardner. She went into labor on a boat, but Mitt was delivered at a hospital like an ordinary human. How humiliating. Anytime Mitt went off, Jay alone was there to absorb it, to tremble and cry, then suffer Mitt's disgust for Jay's infant reactions. No, not alone, not quite. Gulls, otters, sea lions, sharks, even the occasional whale filled out the audience. Those beasts never flinched from Mitt's tirades. Jay won't either. Not anymore. If the NOAA and CG are here, they may try to stop him from diving. But if a diver is crafty, he might not be spotted in the first place. 3,000 PSI. Jay drove with his wetsuit half on. He hasn't missed the rubbery grip of the neoprene on his legs and crotch. The top half of the ebony suit pools at his waist like peeled skin. The suit is a Henderson, sun-faded, coral-scraped, that tricky zipper. Crap condition, but that's the case with all his gear. He had to dig it out of the bins he's been hauling around for 2 years. It feels flimsier than he remembered. Scuba toys, not the real deal. Jay gets out of the car. First thing, his hood. He pulls it on, ears gluing flat to his skull, the neoprene bib overlaying his scrawny sternum. He fishes his hands into the wetsuit arms. It tugs his arm hair. He forgot how it stings. Once on, the Henderson's heavy is clay, 7 millimeters thick for cold Monterey Bay waters. If the water temp hits 58 this time of year, that's lucky. Jay reaches over his back, feels for the 2-foot zipper tether, and takes it with both hands. Jay doesn't believe in God, but prays like he does. 3 years back, he cracked the zipper head on a boat rail while making a January drop at East Pescadero Pinnacle. He hand-signaled his father to surface, and in open air removed his regulator to report that his back was exposed. Mitt's stare was blank as the side of a machete. A busted zipper is your own fault. Mitt dropped. Jay followed. It was the coldest dive of his life. The rigid sea rawing his body, his teeth chattering off his mouthpiece plastic, amplified through the plates of his frozen skull. The zipper is the only piece of equipment Jay repaired for today. He didn't fix it yesterday at the dive shop when he got his tank refilled. He spent as little time there as possible. Everyone at area shops revered Mitt Gardner, local legend, walking tome of maritime lore. Their eyes forever bright for the old diver's approval, while Jay, useless infant, withered. Dive bros knew Mitt drank. Hell, it was how you pumped the best stories from the guy's gut. But they didn't know he was a drunk, a periodic jailbird, a malcontent who couldn't hold a job more than a couple years, and acted like it was a testament to his principles. Principles. A nifty excuse for being an asshole. Jay isn't ignored by dive bros anymore. Now, he's despised. Somehow the story got out. Mitt's long illness, the son's selfish refusal to ease his pain. They don't know what the real Mitt was like. They don't have any idea. So Jay took his wetsuit to Mel's Shoes in Delray Oaks and dealt with Mel, a 1,000-year-old dude who didn't know a dive skin from a Farmer John, but ran his wrinkled fingertips over the wetsuit zipper like a tongue over teeth. Now Jay yanks the tether, and the zipper roller coasters the curve of his spine, sealing him off inside. He exhales. If there's a God, Mel, God bless you. 2017.
You get in a jam, shoe repairmen are your best friends. Get to know your local cobbler, Jay. Those old coots have skills like no one else alive.
Dad says this while stepping into the bright red vulcanized rubber of a full-body dry suit with PVC face shield. Looks cool, like he's off to battle aliens. He's not. They're at Pepper Hills Golf Links, a 20-minute drive from home that feels like 20 million. Unbroken seas of trimmed grass. Clubhouse of dove-colored wood. Dad's current job? Part of a 3-person crew diving for golf balls at the bottom of Pepper Hills Ponds. White gold, Dad says. At 25 cents a ball? Jay's skeptical, but Dad says it adds up. The other two divers suiting up are 18, too close to Jay's 12 for him not to blush. Dad never shuts up about the great jobs he's held. Abalone collecting, oil rig work, diving for Herring Row in Alaska. He's got a topographic tattoo of the 49th state on his thigh. Nan and Eva always roll their eyes at these stories while Mom places food on the table, super quiet. Jay thinks it's because these stories are pre-Mom, back when Dad roamed and dived wherever he pleased, back when he was, there's no other way to put it, happy. It makes Jay feel deranged. Dad's got everything a man could want, a wife who dotes on him despite his defects, 2 daughters to trade playful insults with, a son to torture. Apparently, it's not enough. Since Jay started having memories to call his own, Dad's jobs haven't squared with the reverence he gets from local divers. Sewage outfall inspection, checking where shit feeds from pipes into the ocean, refurbishing pier pilings in plastic or cement, scrubbing barnacles, moss, and bryozoa off boat holes for local yachties, $1 a foot, then barfing in the ditch from the copper and cyanide in the paint. Dad's 52 years old. Pepper Hills is his lowliest job yet. 3,000 PSI. Jay pops the trunk. His BCD, buoyancy compensating device, has seen better days, but only scarcely. Mitt Gardner had superstitions about new gear. His came second-hand, and Jay's third. This one's an old Oceanic, a thick black vest using a puzzlement of clips and pockets to corral a tentacular drape of hoses. He buckled the air tank into the BCD before he left, but gives it a double check. It's only his life, right? 2 black straps tightened around the cylinder with cams, a safety strap looped to the tank's K-valve. It's the only air source Jay's got, a banged-up 120-cubic-foot cylinder, steel instead of aluminum. The thicker wetsuits required for Monterey Bay's cold make a diver so buoyant it helps to have steel's extra density. Another 15 pounds stowed in the BCD pockets would be ideal, but Jay's storage bins yielded only a couple of 5-pound dive weights. The last thing he did before departing was to raid the Tarshish house for that final 5 pounds. In the kitchen drawer, he found a motherload of Duracell batteries. Quick Google search. 1D battery equals 180 grams. 403 grams equals 1 pound. He busted free 12D batteries and, to make up the change, a handful of loose AA's and a single 9-volt. Now his BCD pockets are chipmunk-cheeked. Feels weird. Jay hopes they hold. 60 degrees tops, but man, he's sweating, skin greasy inside the wetsuit. Jay hoists the octopus retainer from the trunk and screws it to the tank valve. 4 hoses droop. He connects the inflator to the BCD and sweeps the other danglers to the side. He slides the whole thing to the edge of the trunk. Time to strap on. Once he's wearing 70 pounds of this stuff, it'll be too much trouble to turn back. Right? 70. Even now, the sheer weight of it shames him. 2017.
We didn't have big, heavy stab jackets when I started. We had heavy-ass tanks that sunk your ass fast. No wetsuits either. We had long-sleeved shirts and coveralls. We never logged dives. We dove for now. What's your certification?
J-12 on a pier, salami sandwiches and wax paper. Huey's there too, paying a kid to gas up the boat engine. Huey is Dad's best friend, maybe his only friend. A former dentist, he now spends all waking hours boating and fishing, chubby with life vests. Huey can't swim. It's bonkers. The guy's, what, 60, 70? Jay's never been able to pin it. Could be 100. He loves the old man. Why Huey puts up with Mitt, he'll never know.
Open water one. Jay replies.
Mitt laughs, a rare thing. Oddly enough, his big square head is carved by laugh lines, the right parenthesis hatched by an old spearfishing scar. There must have been a time when Mitt Gardner's world was rife with things to laugh about. He's over 6 feet tall, hands the size of tennis rackets, body etched in nautical tattoos, no fat, though signs of aging have emerged. A curve to the shoulders, slackening chest muscles, fingers kind of shaky. Still bigger and stronger than Jay will ever be.
Boat's gassed.
Huey's shadow is deep and cool.
Don't be mean, Mitt.
Mitt ignores him.
Open water one, open water two, deep diving, night diving, wreck diving, cave diving. You know what kind of classes we had? We had a drill sergeant who gave us goggles painted over with black paint and made us do laps till we got so tired he had to fish us out with a net. You swam long enough? Boom. Congratulations. You're a diver.
3,000 PSI. Jay sits on the bumper, left arm laced through the BCD vest, right arm. Motion is instantly limited, that straight jacket pinch. Waist strap, thick Velcro, cummerbund and chest strap, two dog collar snaps. All right, here we go, time to stand. Jay wonders if 2 years away from diving has whittled his spine to a twig. He leans forward, shifting the weight from the car trunk. Feels like a Toyota Corolla on his back. He pictures himself face-planting into the dirt, pinned by his own gear, until a dirty CG found him. Clenched the thighs, now piston the legs, and Jay's up, only a second unsteady before he remembers how to be a mule. It's not the 50-pound tank he carries, not the 15 pounds of weights and batteries. It's 17 years of being Mitt Gardner's son. The expectations and disappointments, all of it on his back one more time. Muscle memory. His sweaty hands redo the straps for an upright posture. His knees judder, and it's got nothing to do with the weight. This is called trauma, he thinks. Maybe he ought to give in to Mom, Nan, and Eva, and reconsider that therapist. Move. Move. Jay bends a knee to swipe his diving mask from the trunk. There's a vial of baby shampoo cradled in it, and he smears the pink goo on the inside of the faceplate. Mask defogging agents are cheap, but Mitt never met an official product he didn't feel he could best with a homemade solution. More than the gear, the shampoo's jasmine scent takes him back. 2016. He's 11, in Dad's 13-foot Big Bird yellow Malibu kayak, rubbing shampoo into his little mask's silicone, and he asks Dad if this is the same shampoo Mom washed his hair with when he was a baby. It's the last time he'll ask a question so guaranteed to infuriate. Dad looks appalled, like Jay asked which My Little Pony he liked best.
If your mother listened to me, you would have stung your eyes with the regular stuff and got all your crying out back then.
It rips the smile off Jay's face. He cries too much, and he knows it. Seems like once a day he suffocates inside a cage of hot, hitching tears. He doesn't know why. He only knows Dad grits his teeth through each episode like it's a personal insult. Jay detects no masculinity inside himself. He clings to his mother's apron, literally. He has a blankie. He's too small, skinny as a girl, Mitt likes to accuse over dinner, pushing plates of food across the table until they collide with Jay's. 3,000 PSI. Jay hasn't shed tears in 6 years, not even at Mitt's funeral. He takes the final items from the trunk, two fins in a fine-grade mesh bag. He clips the bag to his BCD. Should use a bolt snap hook, but when he dug out all his dive gear, he couldn't find a single one. Instead, he attaches the bag with a boat snap he borrowed from his friend Chloe Tarshish's school bag. Smart divers don't use boat snaps. They call them suicide clips, in fact, for their lethal tendency to snag onto anything they touch. Jay slams the trunk. So be it. A suicide clip for the place Mitt Gardner died by suicide. Jay should have seen it coming the day he learned of the illness. 2021.
Jay, baby, your dad's got cancer.
The first thing Jay feels is offended by Mom's quavering tone, her obvious expectation that Jay will break down and rush home, everything that happened between him and his dad forgotten. As if contracting cancer is a deed so selfless it erases everything past. The second thing he feels is stupor. Mitt Gardner, human sequoia, sick? What kind?
It's mesothelioma. It's in the lining over his lungs. I've been trying to get him to go to the doctor for months. He's been coughing up blood, having trouble breathing. His whole neck and chest swollen up. Jay, you don't know.
Isn't that caused by asbestos?
They told me it happens to scuba divers too, especially near Monterey. Especially the older ones who used to dive without wetsuits. I guess there's lots of natural asbestos here. Maybe in those old canneries, too.
Mom doesn't throw knives on purpose, but this one slips her hand and strikes Jay in the lungs. A hint of his own mesothelioma fate, maybe. He feels faint. He drops himself to the floor, out of sight of the carefree Tarshishes. He's enough of a hassle staying with his friend's family. They don't need his drama, too. How long? Tears break Mom's levees.
Could be a year. Maybe two. Maybe more if we're lucky.
Pause. Expectant. What is Jay supposed to say? He's kept away thoughts of Dad for 5 months, ever since he left home. Pictures fan through his mind, but they're all from August 1st, 2020, the last time Jay saw Mitt on the deck of sleep. Colliding with the cancer news, the images hurt. Mom sniffles like she feels it too.
Jay, come home. We need you to come home.
3,000 PSI. Home? No. Jay's headed the other direction. At the top of the parking lot is the Carmel Meadows trailhead. Warning signs all over. No campfires. No leashless dogs. No fishing. All wildlife and plants protected. The largest sign shouts, "Danger," intermittent waves of unusual size and force, wading and swimming unsafe. Jay is past being warned. He tromps through the gate, top-heavy, anvil-footed, eyes to the terrain so he doesn't go boom. If Highway 1 hadn't been a car lot, he would have taken the short route up the beach's berm. The signage there is even shoutier. Don't be the next victim. Do not attempt rescue. At least 30 people have died at this beach. One fool per year, Mitt used to say. He loved to proclaim Monastery as America's most dangerous beach. When it came to offing himself, what other choice was there? Dirt snickers under each step of Jay's bare feet. To his left, a rental property peeking from the oak grove. To his right, low ochre hills of golden grass dotted with tufted weeds and stiff shrubs. Nothing between but open air. 5 minutes up the trail is a bracelet of fancy Carmel Meadows homes. A rich old lady with a dog is going to limp over the hill any second. Any second. Jay tenses but can't feel it over the wetsuit's tenser grip. You can't really hide in diving gear. Might as well be wearing a suit of armor. 90 seconds later, his luck's still holding. He thuds across two footbridges, hooks left. A downslope, then he's hidden. Release the old ladies with dogs. Protected, Jay transforms. The Henderson relaxes over his elbows and knees. The oceanic molds to his vertebrae. The octopus hoses pat his shoulders as comfortably as Mom. Soothing whispers from all around. Spindrift. Wild rye. This is what diving could have been like. What water could have been like. If he hadn't been bullied into both with the martial fanfare of Sleepers Arise! 5 more steps and pennants of mist billow away. There it is. The beach. Mitt's graveyard. Its rock jaws wide, like it's hungry for the ocean itself. 3,000 PSI. Fog blankets the bays in the morning, exhaled from green mountains. Burns off by noon most days, but Jay learned as a kid not to be fooled by a silver sky. It'll roast you. He withstands its glare in a standstill swelter, breath caught like it is any time he sees the licking gray froth, the buck and boil, the guttural suck and spilling stew of Monastery Beach. Divers called it Mortuary Beach for a reason. Must have dived these waters a dozen times with Mitt. Never alone. Mitt made him promise to never solo it until he was fully grown. Is he fully grown now? Few would say so. Mitt's diving acolytes sure wouldn't. 6 days ago, walking down Fremont, a dive bro, obvious from his neoprene stink and huge watch, spat on Jay's shoe. Prick, the dive bro muttered, thinking he knew everything about Mitt, the great diver, and Jay, the spiteful son. Maybe the dive bro knew enough. Jay can't go on like this. He's got 12 more months before college, whatever college might look like. 12 more months to be spat on. A humble crescent of sand is all Monastery Beach is, stretching between Carmel by the Sea and Point Lobo State Natural Reserve. A 20-minute stroll for tourists who happen by en route to San Francisco, a percentage of whom will stand with their backs to the water for photos, get swatted by a sleeper wave, and be dragged under by the backwash. It was fit for experienced divers only, and even they had to respect the hidden trough just inside the surf line that, if they didn't choose their entry right, might roll them over and over, a morsel softened for swallowing. The true wonder, maybe the true horror, comes later. 12 nautical miles into the blue, Monterey Canyon, a 90-mile-long, mile-deep abyss the size of the Grand Canyon, a frigid black haven for the world's strangest beings. A spindly stem called Carmel Canyon points at Monastery Beach like the Grim Reaper's finger. What is it trying to say?
Jay thinks of AP English, Dante's Inferno, the inscription over the gates of hell. Abandon hope, all ye who enter here.
Jay's murmur is as soft as surf. Oughta just added to the signs.
3,000 PSI. There's a set of wooden stairs, but the ocean air has chewed them up. The steps, about 15, are helixed, rung like a towel. Jay starts down, and the first step punches a bolt of pain from his heel to his pelvis. Under this much gear, an 8-inch drop feels like 8 feet. He tightens his lower back and keeps going. These steps tilt west, those steps tilt east. The final step is warped at a seesaw angle. Jay slides down it off the lower edge. His feet plant ankle deep in the beach's distinctive round granules of sand. Jay takes 5 steps, the 5th over a 7-foot carcass of kelp that looks like a decomposing dolphin. Now he can see past the point of the rental property, a macabre fence holding back the exposed roots of a giant tree. Way over on the south end of the beach, a commotion. 2 large banks of lights, a tonnage of chugging generators. A bulldozer crawls over the western berm, shovel-mouthed like some Monterey Canyon monster. 30 or 40 people, too, the drivers of all those cars.
Shit!
Jay ducks behind the half-uprooted tree, eyelines blocked. The weight of his tank pitches him at the fence. He barely stays upright. He's panting. The wetsuit's thick, but his heart pounds through it. If the dirty CGs spot him, they'll prevent him from diving. He can't let that happen. His family, the respect of the community, it all rides on this, showing what he can do without Mitt Gardner.
Jay focuses on the tide. It skims into the cove in long, curling cones that atomize under their own weight, strike down, scurry like albino snakes, and gasp in pleasure as they are sucked back into the sea between jagged black rocks. This rubble is one reason divers never drop from this pocket of monastery. 1 bad foothold, and you're down. But the boulders only extend some 20 feet. Jay shouts self-help that no one but he can hear through the ocean booms.
Get through it fast. If you fall, fall forward. Then kick hard. Get through the danger zone before the next set of waves.
The orders sound like Mitt. So Jay does what Mitt never did and adds some optimism.
You got this, Jay. 60 seconds and you're through. Like riding a bike.
He'll be visible for a few seconds before a rocky pile conceals him. He bends his knees, regrips his fins, blows 5 quick exhales to pump himself up, holds his mask in his left hand. With his right, he tugs a final time on the mesh bag. The suicide clip chimes. No matter how rough this entry, Jay can't lose the bag. How else is he going to carry his father's remains?
2021. In a way, he's been carrying his whole family's remains for the 12 months he's been living with friends. It's a big ask during a pandemic. The isolation has been rough on all his friends, but Jay suspects it's been roughest on him, without his family there to rely on. He's a professional foster kid, forever trying to fit in with his hosts, to adhere to whatever COVID protocols they follow or disregard. His sinuses ache from all the nasal swabs.
It's exhausting and lonely, and offers too much time to think. Throwing himself into schoolwork is all that has helped. Outdoors is the only real place he can breathe. It's a Wednesday morning when he steps outside for sun between virtual classes and finds Huey standing by the Tarshish mailbox, in safari hat and COVID mask, belt too high, hands in pockets. The presence of Huey's car doesn't make his appearance feel less supernatural. The second Jay sees him, he knows. The August air goes thick as seaweed. Jay wishes, maybe for the first time ever, he were in the ocean, so he could float over to Huey, no problem, instead of falling to the lawn on jellyfish legs. Huey helps him up, pulls Jay into his arms. The lax crepe of his hands, the grapey funk of his cologne, the gold chain hard under his half-buttoned shirt. Jay wasn't taught how to hug men, but he's doing it, and it feels like he could give all his weight to Huey, and the old man would hold him up.
"I'm sorry, son."
Jay nods into Huey's shoulder, afraid to say anything, because what if there's a sob in his throat? What if that sob dislodges more? Huey's arms feel like the shoulder straps of Jay's BCD.
"It was suicide. I need to tell you that straight up."
Jay nods again. He figured. Last he heard, Dad was out of the hospital, all medical options exhausted.
"We were on my rowboat, son.
He threw himself over.
I don't know how I feel about that, but that's what happened. I told your mom I wanted to be the one to tell you."
Jay stands straight, emotion bottled. He's proud of that. Huey is smiling, but old eyelids, Jay has noticed, can't clamp down on tears. Jay doesn't fault Huey for the suicide, and he adores Huey for knowing he wouldn't.
"Dad used you to get out there. He knew you can't swim."
Huey smiles, angelic.
"Never quit breaking my balls about it."
Jay laughs. What a gift at a moment like this. Huey takes off his safari hat, wipes sweat. Jay's heart goes out to him. The old man lost his best friend today off the side of his boat. There must be grief, even guilt. He carries that weight for Jay. Huey gestures at his car.
"Will you come see your mom?"
Jay nods, doesn't fetch his wallet, doesn't say a word to Chloe. They get in. Only after the engine makes a distracting roar does Jay ask,
"Where'd it happen?" "Monastery."
Huey's Jewish, but has a plastic St. Christopher figure glued to his dash, the patron saint of travel. Jay touches it. There's a flaw in the molding. St. Christopher looks like he's winking. 3,000 PSI. You don't spend most your life diving without learning what the ocean does to corpses. Mitt Gardner would have drawn large scavengers, probably sharks. 6 months from the outset, his corpse would be picked clean, a skeleton. The fact that his bones haven't been spotted by divers suggests they slid between rocks or inside vegetation. Jay hopes to find his dad's skull, but he'll take what he can get. A femur, a few ribs, a handful of finger bones like dice. The proper legal burial of Mitt's remains, not that sham of a plot in Moss Landing, might provide the mystical closure yearned for by his mom and sisters, who then might welcome Jay back into the fold. For Jay, it'll prove to everyone in the Monterey Bay Area that he isn't a worthless son, that he was never needlessly cruel to the great Mitt Gardner. What do they know about cruelty?
Last night, Jay dreamed of his father's bones, buttery in a nest of purple kelp, bejeweled with red sea slugs like holiday lights. The bones were soft in his hands, a gentle touch he never got from Mitt, and therefore he never gave back. He slid them against his cheek. He kissed them. He woke up, tasting marrow. Funny, it tasted like tears.
3,000 PSI. Jay inflates his BCD all the way. He's been worried about the Schrader valve. Delicate thing, subject to sand clogging, salt corrosion. But the vest inflates. Good, positive buoyancy. He needs to be able to float if Monastery starts to roll him. He reaches over his head, cranks the knob of the tank valve. A hissy sigh. That's good. That's air. He checks his scuffed instrument console. The compass does a dizzy spin. The black hand of his depth gauge is at zero, but the red hand holds the max depth of the last dive he made 2 years ago, 62 feet. Elkhorn Dive Center in Santa Cruz did him solid. The pressure gauge rests right at 3,000 PSI. Jay works the regulator under his lips and breathes and relearns the taste of plastic, the profile of his bite marks. He's breathing too fast and tries to slow it, but can't stop his eyes from checking the pressure gauge again. Just like that, down to 2,977 PSI.
Don't waste air where you don't need it, Mitt used to say.
Even here, at the ocean's teeth, Jay can't escape the reprimands. One way or the other, Mitt Gardner always swallowed him alive.
2022. How do you escape your father's closing jaws? You get away. All the way across town, if you can. Chloe Tarshish lives in Pebble Beach, one of the country's top 50 wealthiest zip codes. Jay's been at the Tarshish place a whole year, the best run he's had. Chloe's parents told him if he cleared out their Four Seasons room, he could stay there. The room already had a futon, and soon the Tarshishes bought him a yard sale desk for homework. The Tarshishes are cool. They project foreign films and listen to experimental music. They let their kids watch anything they want, and when they caught Chloe looking at porn, everyone just gave her shit. The Tarshishes are good about Mom, too, chatting her up when she calls to check on Jay, accepting her bank transfers to pay for Jay's needs, and never being weird about it, assuring Mom that Jay's fine and agreeing that, no, it's not ideal for a teen boy to live apart from his family, but it's better than having him on the streets, right? Before the Tarshishes, Jay lived with Tekla Nguyen for 5 months, Mandy Mapes for 3, Evie Novacek for 1, Chet Branch for 3 really bad days, and Faye Kimmerer for the crucial first 14 weeks after leaving home. 5 of the 6 are girls. Jay's guy friends can't compute how he didn't get any action from these chicks, but he didn't. He's not getting any from Chloe either. Jay's not gay, he thinks, at least not mostly, but he prefers the company of women, always has. It was one more thing about him to humiliate Dad. He'd just moved in with the Tarshishes when Dad died. After the cemetery service, Nan and Eva cornered him like two zombies, pleading for him to return home. Look at what he was doing to Mom. Think how lonely she'll be in that house without Dad. Jay couldn't verbalize that he was too ashamed to cavalierly return the moment his antagonist was gone. It smacked of cowardice. The excuse he gave his sisters was that he was unwilling to upset the winning formula of perfect grades he'd established at the Tarshish home. He had big plans, he told them. Graduate in the top 5% of his class.
get a forestry degree from Berkeley, a job at Yellowstone. His past is the only undertow. Before going nomad, Jay lived for 15 years in Seaside, a West Monterey suburb, in a small one-story coral-colored house with a red stone lawn overlooking a trailer park. The house Mom grew up in. If you mentioned that, though, Dad got mad. Young Jay didn't know why, but his sisters said it was emasculating. What's that mean? It means cutting off Dad's balls. What's that mean? It's a metaphor for money. Nan and Eva were touchy about money, all the stuff they couldn't buy. Sunglasses were their obsession, every few months a new pair. Dad feels like a loser because he can't buy a place he actually likes, Nan said. Of course he can't, Eva added. He can't hold a job more than 30 seconds. A place Dad liked? That meant a place on the ocean, if not a houseboat. Dad often stood on the red rock lawn, blandly returning neighbor howdies, neck muscles taut as he strained for the sea. Jay, meanwhile, was seasick, sick of the sea. He strained in his own direction, following the palm trees straight up, then outward along with the power lines, slashing off to everywhere. It wasn't always so bad. Jay recalls peeking into the backyard and seeing his dad spray his mom with the garden hose, and her laughing, and their wet, happy, gripping hands. He remembers Nan and Eva playing a game of flicking their ponytails for Dad to try and grab, then squealing when he caught them. Jay played no such games back then, but Nan and Eva's frivolity brought him hope that one day he might. Hope collapsed every morning at 6 a.m. Sleepers, arise! Jay began to see Dad's siren as the opening punch of a boxing match, Mitt Gardner versus his life. Dad didn't want the house, not really. He didn't want the family, not always. Only Jay, by bad luck, the only other balls haver in the house, was doomed to join Dad's fight, to be brought up as a first mate on a ship headed straight for the rocks. 2,974 PSI. Jay can't sprint in full dive gear, but takes off as fast as he can. When diving with a buddy or one's hard-ass father, there's a checklist. How's your buddy's physical and mental sharpness? How's your own? What's the navigation plan? The depth expectation? Do we know our hand signals? Is air flowing? Are the cylinders secure? Jay alarm-clocked himself before dawn, his own sleepers arise, to drill the checklist into his brain and consult local tide tables so he might enter the water between ebb and flood. On the drive down, he tuned into the weather. 10 to 15 knot winds, seas 3 to 5 feet, small craft advisory, an overall marginal day for diving. No stopping now. He doesn't even glance at the beach crowd. His left foot smacks into fizzing iridescent surf. His right leg sinks to the shin, and he's in it, marching through rocks, elbowing aside high spits of salty spray. He swings his mask through a vein of water, and the baby shampoo runs. And as he's dodging boulders, he's wiping the faceplate with his thumb, defogged now, ready to roll. Fins tucked under his armpit as he affixes the mask over his eyes and nose, motionless for a single second. Too long. A wave like a chest of drawers bashes him from the left. Only on Monastery Beach do waves make blindside attacks. Jay is hurled, but his naked toes dance along a boulder's blade and plant into sand while his right hand lands in perfect starfish shape atop a rock.
Using these three limbs, he springs toward Japan, the next wave staving against his chest, blinding him with gray spray and black sickles of kelp. Velocity wins, and he splashes down on his stomach, right hip only briefly bouncing off the ocean floor. Here's the magic, the marvel of lessening. Every pound of his BCD and cylinder disintegrated as he's cradled in the sea's saline. Jay's himself again, only himself, nothing pulling, nothing dragging. He rolls to his back, fits his right fin over his right foot. They make pocket fins to attach to diving boots, but that wasn't how Mitt taught him. The closer to naked you are, the better, the safer, the realer. With one fin, he kicks and kicks, belly up, eyes to the beach, where white surf claws the sand before retracting. The water fades from fatigue gray to glass blue. Here, right now, Jay feels the galactic suck all the beach signs warned of. The ocean floor drops hard from 2 feet down to 15. The cold phantom hand of the monastery's danger zone curls around his waist. Jay's kicks feel like a baby's fussing. He goes nowhere but down. Did he only survive earlier monastery dives thanks to the babysitting of the great Mitt Gardner? Jay has stayed plenty active since leaving home. Basketball with Chet, jogging with Tekla and Mandy. He bikes damn near everywhere he goes. But a diver's muscles are different, and the skin-tight Henderson tells him precisely what 2 years off have cost. Abs like dough, thighs like sticks, lungs that think they know aerobic exercise but really don't. He paddles harder. He feels the rip current yank. 2013.
What's the difference between a rip current and a rip tide?
A rip tide is, it's like when a tide pulls water along the beach.
Especially a place with a jetty like an inlet. And a rip current?
That's where the backwash comes through, like a break in the sandbar. And zoom!
What are a diver's three air pockets?
I met a kid named Jetty.
No, you didn't. What's the three air pockets?
I did, too. Oh, wait. Jerry.
Focus, Jay.
The lungs and the mask and the eucalyptus tube in your ear.
Eustachian tube. What do you call the electroreceptors in a shark's skull?
The electro... Dad, that's too hard!
Every guy you see working here, if I ask them, they'd know. You want to be able to talk to them without embarrassing yourself?
I don't want to talk to them. I want to go home.
We're not going anywhere till you get these right. Facts are important. The answer is Ampulli of Lorenzini.
That's a stupid fact. No one knows that fact.
Well, now you know it. Someday, in some way you can't imagine, one of these so-called stupid facts is going to save your stupid life.
2941 PSI. Mitt taught him what to do. Don't lose your damn head, first of all. Then paddle parallel to the beach. A few feet ought to do it. A rip current's channel is narrow, hourglass-shaped. Jay's not going to give Mitt too much credit. Any swimming booklet, any internet search will tell you the same thing. Sure enough, a few paddles and the blistering seethe lets go. Like that, Jay's past the break. He floats, puts on his left fin, breathes hard through his regulator. The splashing is crisp through his hood and feels nice on his hot cheeks. With waves this choppy, he doubts the dirty CG's noticed him, but he's got some struggle ahead. Rocks aren't the only reason divers don't enter from here.
A thick, black shadow runs 1,000 feet straight into the bay like a slinking prehistoric serpent. The kelp forest. Underwater, it's a photographer's paradise. Stalks reaching 40 feet tall, a real mysticism to the undulating green against the water-rippled furnace of sun. At the surface, the kelp forest has the quality of an oil spill. Jay aims for what looks like the thinnest patch. A swell lifts him, the kelp vanishes, then the wave rolls on, and he's dropped into an open palm of mustard-colored leaves half his size. They slop around Jay's arms and legs like tongues, a heavy, drooling grip. He tries to kick away, but only gets both legs swaddled in deeper leaves. He thrashes, but it's like fighting off wet blankets. Jay's pulse quickens. He doesn't remember the kelp forest ever being this thick. Mitt would have loved it. He was obsessed with the purple sea urchins annihilating the kelp, positive that humans were to blame. Probably true, but it's also humans who invented the BCD, and without it, Jay would be under the kelp already, a place thick, dark, and confusing. Jay ducks underwater for the first time, a green world, and tears long, gummy blades of kelp from both ankles, then kicks, kicks, aiming himself between stalks. He's free. He pops his head into fresh air. Regulator laughter sounds like robot gasps.
"Never dive monastery alone," Mitz said.
Well, he did it anyway, and the dangers are behind him. Take that, Mitt. Take that, every doubter, every underestimator.
Jay squints through a mask stippled by beads of water. There's kelp slime on his wetsuit, under his nails, too. He shudders. He's always reviled kelp texture, too much like flesh. He splashes his arms in the water to get rid of it. In the blur of his pale flesh, he realizes he's forgotten his gloves.
Fuck. Shit. He left them in the car trunk. Afraid of the dirty CGs, he geared up too fast. He flexes his hands. Not too cold yet, but that will change. Too bad. No going back for gloves. He knows one madman, at least, who preferred to dive without them.
2017. Golf ball collection is done by touch, no gloves. The water hazards at Pepper Beach are legendarily vile. Dye keeps them looking good, but fairways are noxious with chemicals and fertilizers that flow into the ponds, mixing with goose crap to make a silky black pudding. A diver can't see in that.
"Gotta keep your eyes shut down there," Dad says, zipping his red rubber dry suit. "Otherwise you start seeing things."
This is interesting.
"What kind of things?"
"Creatures, people, solar systems. Your brain puts stuff in your eyes."
Jay has horror movie visions.
"Cool."
Dad smiles through the PVC face shield.
"It is, a little. I used to think so when I was young. But distraction like that is deadly."
Jay deflates. He's 12 and can't say anything right. He ought to know Dad's chatter is to distract from the fact that he's 52 and trawling through goose shit 8 hours a day. The only decent gig Dad's had in Jay's lifetime was working as a charter boat dive guide. The clientele wasn't a great match. Tourists with unbent paddy cards, wealthy teens on daddy's dime, newlyweds looking at each other instead of the safety demonstration. But Mitt Gardner liked to lecture. And, after all, diving was diving. For 10 months, Dad seemed kind of happy. He got fired for telling customers how 9/11 had been a godsend for baleen whales.
The emergency closings of ports had dramatically lowered whales' glucocorticoids, their stress hormones. When a customer told Mitt it was unpatriotic to celebrate September 11th for any reason, Mitt got into it regarding which mammals were more worth saving. Dad's voice is muffled through the face shield as he quizzes Jay on hazmat protocol. How does Dad not notice the foursome in the golf cart laughing at him? How can he be so attentive to whale glucocorticoids and so inattentive to human ridicule? Jay looks away from the laughers as Dad lowers himself into shit. 2,923 PSI. What Jay first takes as shit in the water is actually a dead sea lion. It bobs 20 feet off, radiating rot. Its kitten face gone skull-like, eyes gobbled, an ageless agony to its golden fangs. White bone gleams through a red hole in its blubbery hide. Good diver practice is not to dwell on what killed it. Jay pictures sharks and killer whales, their caves of stalactite teeth. He kicks away from the corpse. He's got to be 800 feet out. He pulls the collar of his Henderson to let water skim between neoprene and skin, standard temperature regulation. It's goddamn cold, upwelling from the canyon. His shivers push worms of ice water along his body. Jay kicks long enough to warm his temp. He looks north at what monastery divers call the wash rock, a boulder jutting from white tidewater a quarter mile off the beach. It's the finish line. You align with the wash rock, then drop. These helpful hints are buried in the mental clutter stockpiled by Mitt. What's the significance of 1,080 versus 4,725 feet per second? The speed of sound in air versus the speed of sound in water. What's the weight of air inside an 80 cubic foot tank? 0.08 times 80 equals 6.4. What's the weight density differential between seawater and fresh? 64 C divided by 62.4 fresh minus 1 times 100 equals 2.5%. He'd love to flush all of it from his head. And he will, the second he lays a hand on Mitt's bones. Jay's backstroke aligns him with the wash rock. He stops, drops his legs, fins cycling easily in open water. This may be the last dive of his life, but he can't deny the old spark of excitement, an astronaut about to leave the capsule. Jay adjusts his mask, the nose pocket snug, the silicone skirt slicked tight to his brow. He takes the regulator from his mouth, voids it, inhales his last taste of natural air. He peers back at dry land. The beach is all but gone, a white zipper sealing the ocean to the hills. He sees the beach's namesake peeking from forest, the Carmelite Monastery of Our Lady and Saint Therese. He's taken by a hazy longing. It feels like treading water, keeping afloat in life's rips and surges. Mom's big on church goes every Sunday to the First Presbyterian on El Dorado Street. Last he heard, Nan and Eva, one in Bakersfield, the other in San Jose, both joined churches. Jay used to go with Mom, a surefire way to get out of pre-dawn seafaring. But after Jay fled home, he accepted he was godless, just like his dad. Mitt had robbed that piece of him, too. Makes him sad. God might have been a handy wrench to carry these last 2 years. He nearly grabbed hold of that wrench once, right there in the monastery. 2019. Dad's about to drop for a second dive.
There's a 3,000-pound mola mola down there. How can Jay not want to see that? Jay's 14 and bored. Dad's hurt look only steals Jay's stubbornness. Huey stretches his left leg from the kayak and lies that he's cramping up. He'll paddle Jay back to Monastery Beach, have them an energy bar breakfast. Dad waves them off. Whatever. It's early, like Dad likes it. Jay watches the cars wend toward the monastery. Huey notices, motions Jay into his car, and they join the parade. Despite being a Jewish dentist, Huey knows everything about the discalced Carmelite nuns. He describes their daily rituals of self-denial and prayer. Does Dad know about this? Dedication, repetition, discipline, those sound like Mitt Gardner values. 8 a.m. Mass is open to the public every day but Thursday. Huey takes off his safari hat and starts up the long white stairs. Jay panics. They're going in? Mom's church trained him in buttoned shirts, choking ties, stiff loafers. He's wearing sweats.
It's not like that here, Huey says. Come on, you'll see.
Huey's right. There are people in dress clothes, but also kids in shorts, adults in athletic wear. A loose congregation of 30-some stands, sits, chants in reply to the priest. A call, ayeka, response, hinieni. The rest is indecipherable reverberation. Jay doesn't mind. Compared to the First Presbyterian, this place is a marvel. Ceiling taller than any kelp he's ever seen, braced in the brown stanchions of a pirate ship's hull. A sermon. Genesis, Eden's forest. Don't eat from the tree of knowledge. The specifics are hard to make out in the tripling echoes. Jay disengages, reads the words Nostra conversatio in caelis est over a door. He whispers to Huey. What's that mean? Has Huey known Latin his whole life? He laughs silently. The long gray hairs of his eyebrows wiggle like antennae. Our conversation is in heaven, he translates. Why's that funny? Delighted tears squeeze from Huey's eyes. A lot of conversation in here, he gestures at the door. But heaven's out there. 2892 PSI. Belly flop like another of God's dropped boulders, but regression to gills and fins comes quick. Or is it evolution? Were legs a grand mistake?